This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
Great to have Eric Margolis with us today. Eric is the foreign correspondent for the Toronto Sun. I have to say, one of the great voices for morality and justice and peace and decency in foreign relations. Take a look at his wonderful archive on LouRockwell.com. I also highly recommend all his books, but his newest book on the American Raj domination by the U.S. and the Muslim world and what the future holds. And Eric, right now, of course, all of us are thinking about Gaza. I mean, was this sort of the last hurrah, if that's the word, of the Bush-Cheney regime to have at least proved, if not have initiated, this war?
Yes, I certainly think it was. So I just wrote, I called it a Parthian shaft, a last arrow that does deadly damage. Clearly, at least to me and my sources, the administration, this is George Bush's parting gift to Israel and parting last piece of damage to American interests in the Mideast. Gave Israel a green light to launch its attack on Gaza, whose main objective really is to destroy the Hamas movement so that it can be replaced by the U.S. and Israeli-backed Fatah movement that will then make some kind of deal with Israel.
You know, whatever one thinks of Hamas, isn't Hamas the only actually democratically elected government in the Arab world?
That's right. It was the U.S. kept hectoring and demanding that its Arab clients and allies hold democratic elections. Absolutely the first clean election that was held in the Arab world. There was one in North Africa in 1991 where Islamists won parliamentary elections, and they were promptly jailed by the French and U.S.-backed army. This was the first or second, if you want to call it, election. There was none. It was a perfectly clear, clean election, supervised by foreign monitors. Hamas won resoundingly. And immediately after Hamas's victory, Israel imposed a punishing blockade on Gaza, which has continued and intensified to this day. And the U.S. and Israel began a policy trying to starve the people in Gaza into submission, as they did with Iraq, same principle, to try and get the people to rise up and overthrow their government.
You know, these sorts of starvation blockades, I think you've written so movingly and wonderfully about what happened with Wilson and the British after World War I and the starvation blockade of Germany and what the results of that were. These sorts of anti-civilian tactics certainly don't exactly build love and tolerance among the people being starved. And clearly it's also an act of war under international law to attempt to starve a people to death in order to bring about political change. In fact, isn't this what might be called terrorism under other circumstances?
Well, you know, the old line, terrorism is the war of the poor, war is the terrorism of the rich. And it's certainly starvation, collective punishment, is a violation of international law, specifically of the Geneva Conventions. It is considered a war crime. The U.S. did it in Iraq. It's done it in Cuba. It's done it in other places against Germany in World War I. The British did it. But, you know, it's might makes right, and that's certainly the case this week in the Mideast, where we see Gaza being bombed back into the Stone Age and really nothing being done to stop it.
How long is it going to go on? I mean, the forthcoming Obama administration seems to have pretty much the same attitude towards it as the Bush administration.
Unfortunately, this has caused dismay to many of President-elect Obama's supporters, because he has said he issued one platitude about the issue and has ducked ever since. And he's been vociferous about other foreign affairs issues. And this is clearly a bad sign in my book. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he comes out stronger on the Mideast. But, you know, we just read, according to Agence France-Presse, that on a recent resolution over Gaza, that Israel's Prime Minister Olmert actually called up President Bush and said, the U.S. was going to vote for it. He said, I want you to change your vote. And Bush, the story is to believe, got Condoleezza Rice to humiliated her and ordered her to change her vote at Israel's demand. Well, never mind the rights or wrongs of Israel, this just shows that that things have gone off kilter in Washington, and that America badly needs a more balanced foreign policy.
But here we have Obama, who seeks to apparently step up the war in Afghanistan, maybe in Pakistan too. I used to think there'd be less of a chance of his going to war against Iran, but now I wonder.
I'm also disturbed by this too, and increasingly so. Is it that every American president has to have his own war and prove his machismo? I thought this might have been okay in the campaign against John McCain, but Obama seems to determine to double the number of American troops in Afghanistan, and they are sitting on top of a smoking volcano of Pakistan. In my view, it's a grave error. America's getting is going to sink deeper and deeper into an endless war in the region. Pakistan threatens to blow up, and we are going to further destabilize it by arming tribal groups there to fight against each other. It's a huge, bigger mess in the making at a time when America is bankrupt. We were all hoping that President Obama would say, enough with the wars, let's do some creative diplomacy.
What's going to happen in Egypt? Are people in Egypt upset at what the U.S. dictator Mubarak has done in terms of closing the border with Gaza and imprisoning these people and entirely supporting the Fatah side?
Well, Lou, that's a very good observation. Yes, there's great dismay inside Egypt, but Egyptians are a very passive, easygoing people. They're called the Italians of the Middle East. They have put up with Mubarak for 28 years of the U.S.-backed dictatorship in Egypt, which you never hear anything negative about in the U.S. press, or very little. Egypt has played a disgraceful and slimy role in this whole Gaza thing by colluding with Israel and the U.S. to keep the Palestinians bottled up in the world's largest open-air prison. Egypt is afraid that the ideas of Hamas, the revolutionary ideas about sharing the wealth and government providing services to people, is going to infect Egypt and produce some kind of revolution. Mubarak is on his way out eventually. They're trying to cultivate his son, Gamal. Don't know if it'll work. But whatever the case, Egypt is very shaky. It's one of the next big crises waiting to happen.
You know, sometimes I wonder, I mean, are these only mistakes of U.S. foreign policy, or are there people who actually want chaos? I mean, who think that there may be either profit opportunities or power opportunities in, say, Pakistan going down or Egypt going down in terms of their regime change?
I'm sure there's some people like that, Lou, but I think most of the decisions are made by people who are incredibly arrogant and profoundly ignorant. So, such was certainly the case of the Bush administration, which was like some kind of Godzilla stomping on all these little countries and destroying everything in its way. And not understanding really what they were getting into. And look now at the Obama administration coming in. Its so-called experts are also don't really understand the situation in Pakistan or in Afghanistan and are giving wrong advice. I was talking to Karl Rove recently, and I said, are you really in favor of expanding the war in Afghanistan? He said, oh, yes, absolutely. I said, how are you going to win that war? I said, it's a national resistance to Western occupation. He said, more helicopters, more technology. Well, that kind of answer is worthy of the British Empire. Those days are long past.
I guess so, but if I were, after hearing that, to hear that Karl Rove had a contract with a helicopter manufacturer, I guess I wouldn't be surprised.
Touché.
One of the great things about you as a foreign correspondent, I must say, unlike the rest of the people that I see in the national media in this country, you actually know something about these countries. You've traveled widely. You're widely educated. You speak the languages. I mean, you know. So you're an expert on Afghanistan. You've written a wonderful book on Afghanistan. What's ahead for the U.S. troops? I mean, are we into another Vietnam here?
God, I hope not. I was in the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War. I wasn't in Vietnam, but I was in uniform. And I see so many of the mistakes that we made during Vietnam being repeated in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And our foreign policy has become overly militarized, as even Defense Secretary Gates just said, to his credit. But we still have an imperialist impulse in the U.S., and there are the powers that be in Washington, you know, the military-industrial complex against which President Eisenhower, and by the way, I just put his picture up in my office so I can look at him every morning and remember when American presidents used to be great and honored men, that Eisenhower warned about this. And we see him, this war in Afghanistan is being driven, in my opinion, primarily by oil and the desire to build oil pipelines from the Caspian Basin south. And I'd hoped that President Obama would be above this. So far, he hasn't been.
Yeah, it's pretty disturbing. Now, tell us about Iran. I mean, it seems during the campaign, of course, Obama took a more peaceful approach, or at least potentially more peaceful approach than McCain. But when you see that somebody like, say, Dennis Ross may be his key advisor on such issues, do we have to be worried about a U.S. attack on Iran?
Possibly, yes. The lineup so far of Mideast advisors does not suggest any new thinking in the Mideast, but more of the same old stuff. Obama has said that he wants to take a more measured diplomatic approach to Iran, which is to be applauded, and not to fall into all the hysteria that's been going on. U.S. intelligence says that Iran is not developing nuclear weapons. So hopefully there'll be a more creative relationship. President Ahmadinejad in Iran may also lose power soon in elections. So there are good things there. But once again, things could get violent with Iran very quickly over some clash in the Gulf. But on the other hand, you know, one of the reasons that the resistance against U.S. occupation of Iraq has died down is because I believe Washington and Iran have made a secret deal where Iran would get its Shia supporters in Iraq, like the Mahdi army, to stop fighting the Americans in return for American forbearance not to attack Iran. So there's something, they're playing footsie.
Well, very, very interesting. But of course, they've done it before. I remember the cake with a key on it, and you know, when they were getting arms for the Contras. So I guess this is not a new thing in American foreign policy.
You know, it's like when a man meets a beautiful woman, he gets stupid and says and does silly and stupid things that he later regrets. America does this with the Middle East. The minute it starts dealing with the Middle East and the Muslim world, this very intelligent, experienced, tough nation starts doing foolish things. And we've been doing it with Iran. The mess that's going on now in Gaza is going to set back American interests in the Muslim world by years, and it's going to present us with a whole new range of problems.
You know, so far as I can tell, there are no Muslim spokesmen in America, anyway, who are in the press, who are persuasive and are allowed to speak, so that Americans are increasingly filled with hatred in Muslims, know nothing about Muslim peoples or their religion, their culture, and I guess the continuing wars depend always on the demonization of the other. Can you, besides your own works, can you recommend books or articles that people ought to be reading, things they ought to be watching? Should we be watching the Al Jazeera site, for example? We don't get it on television here, but how can we learn more?
Yes, to get a more balanced view, I strongly recommend Al Jazeera, which has very good and very well-balanced articles, in spite of the fulminations against them by the Bush administration. And I recommend the UK Independent newspaper. The International Herald Tribune has some good material in it that escapes the censorship of the New York Times of the party line. I like Israel's newspaper, Haaretz, H-A-A-R-E-T-Z, which gives you better news about Israel than any of the American media, and is much more critical because the Israeli newspapers can tell the truth about the situation, whereas the American media self-censors on the subject of the Middle East. I would avoid much of the American media. Unfortunately, the most balanced newspaper that we had in the U.S. reporting on the Middle East was the Christian Science Monitor. It's gone. It's no longer printing, but it's online. It has very good reporting. Agence France-Presse has good reporting. So you can get good news on the Middle East, but you just have to dig for it.
Eric Margolis, the first place, of course, to always go is to your writing. Take a look at Eric's archive on lewrockwell.com. His book, latest book, American Raj, his other works. Eric Margolis, thanks for all you do and for the voice of truth and justice that you represent. And thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure, Lou. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by lewrockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. Thanks for listening.